it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Nuclear weapons, much in the news these last weeks because of provocations by the Kremlin. However, now comments from NATO makes nuclear weapons a focus for everyone, including the technology editor of Defense One, Patrick Tucker. Patrick, I read from the AP out of Brussels. Russian President Vladimir Putin would be crossing, quote, a very important line, quote, if he were to order the use of nuclear weapons in Ukraine. This according to NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. He goes on to explain that NATO is holding an exercise dubbed Steadfast Noon in the coming week. The long-planned maneuvers are conducted around the same time every year and run for about 1 week. They involve fighter jets capable of carrying nuclear warheads, but do not involve live bombs. We'll stop there and say NATO is now having conversations about in the event of a tactical nuclear weapon, conversations in which the defense ministers and other interested parties will confer. Recently, you have filed a report about the effect of a tactical nuclear weapon on the battlefield. Let's stay to that, because much of the talk is the difference between tactical and strategic, which is in the eye of the beholder. If you're going to be hit by a TAC nuke, you don't care how big it is. It's going to get you. But what about a battlefield such as Ukraine? Is there any comment that says this will or will not be effective against what appears to be a very disciplined and spread out offensive by the Ukrainian forces? Good evening to you, Patrick.
Yes, good evening to you. So, yes, the difference between a tactical and a nuclear weapon doesn't really matter if you're a civilian that is anywhere close to experiencing a nuclear blast. But in terms of warfare, it is an important distinction. A tactical nuclear weapon is a relatively smaller one, so it would be lower yield, something beneath the 50 kiloton range. And Russia has about 2,000 of these. They went heavy into them during the Cold War and even after. For these sorts of things, whereas the United States and other countries largely eschewed them. So we don't really have tactical nuclear weapons. We have weapons we could modify to be tactical, but we don't. Now, the thing to understand about this threat of potentially using one of these in Ukraine from Russia, if you were to drop one of these on a large populated city like Kyiv, then you would have, for instance, a 20 kiloton attack on Kyiv would result in about 31,000 people dying, 65,000 people being injured within 24 hours. That's a huge, devastating loss. But on the battlefield, where you have this Ukrainian front line that really is almost the length of Portugal, this weapon is not actually going to be very effective. You would use it if you were going to punch through a line like a reinforced line like within a NATO country. But the Ukrainian units are maneuvering so quickly, they're so spread out that you wouldn't take out very many of them at all using a weapon like this. You would just be making a slightly larger explosion. But they move together really quickly. They move apart really quickly. It's hard to figure out where they are. What I've heard from Michael Frankel, he is a fellow at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab. He's actually written a lot of papers on tactical nuclear weapons for the U.S. military, is that the cost for Russia of deploying one of these things is going to be a lot bigger than any battlefield benefit that they gain. They're not going to be able to use it to actually move the Ukrainian front lines very well. They will immediately incur a lot of new consequences politically and possibly militarily, depending on how the United States and NATO chooses to respond to the use of one of these. You would certainly see more difficult relations with China and India and other countries that have to varying degrees said supportive things about the Russian endeavor or about Putin. All of those connections and all of that support begins to fray as you cross that threshold. And while the United States and NATO haven't specified what consequences Vladimir Putin or the Russian regime might experience, they have been really consistent in saying that this is a huge threshold and it would definitely mark a big escalation for them. So the point here is that while we are talking a lot, and there's certainly that threat there of the use of one of these tactical nuclear weapons on the Ukrainian battlefield, unless you're going to directly target civilians just to intimidate them, which is a strategy that the Russians continue to try but continues to fail, you're not going to actually turn the tide of this conflict on the plains of the Donbass, because the Ukrainian front line is too spread out. The Ukrainians maneuver way too quickly, and they're just not in the sorts of concentrations, the big, heavy, like battalion formation concentrations that would be affected by the use of one of these on the battlefield. So all of those concepts that Russia developed going back to the Cold War about what one of these would do, they're looking pretty obsolete in the context of 21st century warfare.
What about the radiation? Because there's this talk that a TACNUK is not a radiation threat at the scale of a strategic weapon. We think of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the terrible burns and the people with cancer diagnosis afterwards. Is that part of the matrix here?
Well, so in terms of it's the direct military advantage, there's very there would probably be very little on the Ukrainian battlefield. But in terms of environmental and health after effects for the Ukrainian people that might be in this area or even sort of proximate to this area, those would be very real. This is a tool that would be really devastating for a civilian population. And I don't think that we should underestimate the secondary health and environmental effects from deploying a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine. The studies that have been done about on this by Johns Hopkins and by others didn't fully take into effect a lot of different atmospheric conditions like wind and rain and the movement of water and things like that on fallout on radioactive debris. So while it sounds like it's going to be really limited, the secondary environmental effects could be very big. So that's sort of like the tricky thing here. Deploying one of these wouldn't help Vladimir Putin win, but it would be a miserable outcome for a lot of people in Ukraine. So we don't want to minimize that. The fallout, the radiation, secondary health effects could be really big, and we don't have a good estimation of how big they would be.
Also, Patrick, we've heard for weeks now about iodine pills being distributed. I first heard about it in Romania, passing iodine pills onto Moldova. Then I heard that they were being distributed in Kyiv. And now there's a report that Finland has run out of iodine pills. Also, that the U.S. has ordered Amgen's sort of accelerated iodine pill. Have you heard similar stories about everybody clamoring for iodine as a preventive in some fashion of a radioactive cloud?
Yeah, and that makes sense that they would do that, that you would see a sudden rush on iodine and other mitigation factors. That doesn't necessarily speak to any hard intelligence that Russia is about to deploy a tactical nuclear weapon, other than the direct statements from Russian officials. And there was some limited camera footage of a truck moving something that could be a nuclear device sort of close to Ukraine. And then that reporting on that disappeared about a week ago. There isn't any hard indication that Russia is going to actually use this thing, at least not anything that the Pentagon or that the intelligence community in the U.S. will say, yes, we think this is going to happen. They've all been very clear. We have no good indication that this is actually close to happening. But as a preventative measure, yeah, you would definitely see a potential rush on iodine, on possibly also a move to move radioactive protective gear into Ukraine. And the United States has already moved a lot of radioactive protective gear into Ukraine for use by military units there. That began to happen closer to the beginning of the war. It's just that's the sort of movement that a lot of us don't pay as much attention to as the big movement of weapons, of HIMARS, of howitzers, etc. But the Ukrainians do have some protective equipment. You're going to see, I think, continue to see a move to get them iodine and right. Press on the open supply for it in the months ahead.
And finally, rough comments from the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell. Any nuclear attack against Ukraine will create an answer. Not a nuclear answer, but such a powerful answer from the military side that the Russian army will be annihilated. What I presume from this is that right now there's no presumption that the U.S. or NATO would answer with a nuclear weapon. Taking us back to Steadfast Noon, this demonstration of aircraft capable of carrying nuclear weapons, is that meant to make some message to Moscow? How do we interpret that, given that the other remarks are we won't use nukes in retaliation?
Right. Well, the use of these aircraft are kind of the standard aspect of exercises like this. The F-35, the most important fifth generation fighter plane that is in wide use among NATO allies, is capable of carrying a nuclear weapon. So these are just the standard sorts of jets that you would see as part of an exercise of this scale. But that is part of their point. They are supposed to be these kind of ambiguous things. Is that F-35 carrying a nuclear weapon or not is the sort of thing that you want an adversary to consider in the event of a large, you know, state-on-state conflict. So that's part of their ability to demonstrate these cross-military exercises, this cross-military coordination, doing so with these jets that are nuclear capable, that is all supposed to send a statement about the ability of the allies to deter a Russian attack on NATO territory. But, you know, strangely, we still haven't seen any move by Russia to cross the line into NATO. So we're not exactly sure what all this symbolism really demonstrates, because they haven't been really clear about what those consequences would be for the use of a tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine, which is, of course, a NATO partner, but not a NATO member.
Patrick Tucker, technology editor, Defense One. Drones are in the news also when we come back. I'm John Batchelor.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.